All right, welcome back to another episode of the Lookout Podcast. I'm joined by the great Mike Walton. Mike Walton, am I saying your last name right?
Yeah, totally.
Perfect, man. Yeah. Dude, I was just telling you before we came on, and this is the first time you got to see my Airstream, so I was pretty pumped to show it off a little bit.
Yeah, it's rad. I like it.
Yeah, thanks, man. Yeah. So I was just saying, like, every time I talk to you, man, like, I guess a little background. Mike's silviculture, so the Forest Service, and the first time I met him, I was on the fire crew working on the engine in Steve-I. And you were working in Silv, short for silviculture in Stevensville. And whenever you had a chance, you'd come help us out in fire, and which was awesome because you're so stoked. And then the stories you had, I remember like one of the first times I think we might have been doing some saw work or something. We're hiking up the hillside up Ambrose, and huckleberries and the little ones are thimbleberries.
Oh, the thimbleberries. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And, like, I was like, picking one, and then I think I was just looking at a thimbleberry because I wasn't sure if it was, you know, if it was edible. And you're like, what you do, man, is you grab the huckleberry, you grab a thimble, and then you grab a little huckleberry, and make a little sandwich.
Yeah, totally.
And I was like, perfect, man. And I was on that all day.
It fits in there perfectly. And then the flavor really like complements, and you're like, oh, this is perfect.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's really fun.
Yeah, absolutely, man. It's just, and it's a nice little energy boost, at least for me when I'm out there in the woods, you know.
Oh, totally.
Make sure I'm not blowing out your eardrums real quick. But if you could, man, could you explain a little bit about silviculture? Because I was in fire most of my career, well, like all of my career, I guess. And then I don't know, I just didn't really like have my head out of the sand. So when I first went to Missoula, then I started working a little bit with silviculture folks and got a little bit of understanding, but not that great. So I wonder if you could kind of explain what it is.
So silviculture is, I think the definition is basically the art and science of growing trees. And so you kind of can have different focuses in doing that. So you can like sustained yield timber management would be maybe more of like the traditional form of silviculture where you're kind of putting stands of trees on rotations. And you basically kind of look at how much the trees grow and then basically thin them out with some sort of plan for eventually having all the trees cut down, but having cohorts of younger trees coming up to replace all of those.
Yeah.
And then kind of, there's also maybe another side of it, which is kind of like forest health stuff. So we have different research that shows that basically certain densities of trees attract insects and disease in greater amounts. And so if you can kind of reduce that density to a certain amount, it gives the trees more resources to fight off the insects that come about.
And, oh, gotcha. Like pine beetle or something.
Exactly.
Like that, right?
Exactly. Yeah, totally.
Man, like that was my first exposure to it. It was my friend John, I think his Father Gill, I think was the name in Missoula.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Am I getting his last name right?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, yeah. Great guy. And he needs some help. And one of the other silviculturist folks needs some help putting pheromones on trees.
Oh, yeah.
So that was the first exposure I had to silv. Yeah, it was cool, man. We're up in Marshall Woods hiking around. And,
oh, cool.
Yeah, like, and at first I thought, like, oh, this would be kind of cool, just like a stroll through the woods. But they were motoring, so I was, like, trying to keep up because they had their system down to, you know, stay up on the pheromones. And,
oh, yeah.
And what, do you know, like, is that just like bug repellent then, the pheromones?
Yeah, so essentially a female beetle will land on a tree and she'll put off a pheromone saying, hey, I'm here, let's like reproduce. And then males will come and then they'll come into a point where there's too many males and she'll release a pheromone that says like, hey, there's too many dudes here. Like, and so then essentially what those pheromone packets do is they replicate that pheromone saying like, hey, you know, we're closed for business here. Like, go find some other tree.
Time to move on.
Yeah, time to move on. So that's kind of cool. You know, they're like, hey, we know how to fix this problem. You know?
Man, whoever figured that out, pretty smart. Lots of research, I imagine, I guess.
Oh, yeah, totally. Know? Yeah.
And is that tree specific, that pheromone? Or like, is that more
I think
ponderosa?
It'd be like beetle specific. Oh, beetle. You know, so whatever the pine beetle, what was the mountain? I'm not sure. Super great on this, but yeah, like mountain pine beetle. So whatever the beetle is that's most common to attack that type of tree. And so,
that's a pheromone that you match with that type of tree. Gotcha.
And I think we typically,
I think it's ponderosa we're hanging.
We always do them on ponderosa. Typically, ponderosa, white bark pine, kind of our trees that we're trying to promote more on the landscape because typically that's we typically want to promote Ponderosa pine.
Yeah. It's a fast grower, right? And fire resistant.
It's totally fire resistant. It probably would have been the most of the composition of the forest when you had like widespread Native American burning. You would have had your ponderosa pine would have been left, and the they don't seem to regenerate that well unless maybe like in a flat area, whereas like you get a lot of Doug fir will just regenerate pretty thick.
Oh, really?
Regardless of kind of the conditions, it seems like. So
oh, gotcha.
And typically those seedlings would have been burned in the, you know, the broadcast burning that the Native Americans were doing, and and then with the natural ignition and stuff.
You had to keep the Douglas fir from out competing the Ponderosa, right?
Right. Yeah.
And I kind of knew about this, but I didn't really put it to the test until we were talking, and I think we were out patrolling or doing something, and I was like, I think I was picking your brain on the butterscotch smell from Ponderosa's.
Oh yeah.
And I don't think I was getting my nose quite in there enough between like the bark or something.
Oh yeah.
And man, once you kind of figure it out, man, it's a nice smell.
Oh, absolutely. And they're all unique. And you kind of like the real way to do it is like you ever see the way a dog sniffs the air, where it's kind of these like short little, you know, you're doing these like short little ones, you know, do it just like that. And you really got to get in there. And I don't know, it might be totally true, but on the south-facing slopes, we're on the south-facing side of the tree where it's, like, warmed up.
Yes.
Seems to have the best smell.
And that's what it was, because I think I was on, which is, you know, kind of obvious looking back, but I think I was on, like, the shaded side, like, more of a north-facing, and I was just like, you're like, no, come on over here. And I was like, oh, yeah, it's a big difference.
Oh, yeah, it's good.
Yeah,
it's
warmed up. It's so nice, man. Yeah. Such a pleasant-smelling tree. Like, even we had to cut a few down recently in the campgrounds that were... They're on their way out, you know, so we didn't want them to land on a camper or anything, you know, so down there in Spring Gulch. And man, I was telling somebody, I was like, I wish I could bottle this aroma like put it in my Airstream. You know,
yeah,
it
totally.
Smells so nice.
I think the older ones too smell the best. I don't know why that is, but so like typically at their end of their lives, they probably smell the best, you know.
Oh, gosh, yeah, man.
I was working down in Arizona. I would actually like you'd be like marking trees to get cut, you know, or be left, you know, and you'd like come by one that would smell really good. And you'd be like, oh, you got to stay, bud. You smell too good, you know. So survival strategy too, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They know what they're doing a little bit, you know, it feels like, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you smell a little nicer. You might get a chance to stay.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, so you've kind of worked quite a few different places, I guess, on the U.S.
Yeah, yeah. So I started with the Forest Service in like 2004 with the trail crew in out of the Selway Bitterroot Wilderness. So I was out of Fenn, which was awesome. So like I'm originally from Southern California, and I grew up in this really awesome little mountain town, but I'd never, you know, and I did some cool stuff. I hiked the John Muir Trail and the Sierra Nevadas and stuff, seen that, you know, but I hadn't really seen like wilderness to the extent of what the Selway Bitterroot feels like. There were the Rocky Mountains where it's like big rivers and
just kind of vast.
Vast and like uninhabited, you know? Yes. And so that was like the most incredible kind of like introduction to a greater world, you know, of wilderness and mountains and everything.
What a great jump, dude.
Yeah, it was awesome.
You know, from where you spent time, a little bit of Southern Cal, you know, mountains and country and like middle of nowhere. I guess that's Idaho, right?
Totally. Yeah. Right over outside of Kooski, just east of Kooski there. Yeah.
Man, what a cool spot. Fenn's one of the, the most historic looking ranger station I've ever seen, you know, like, and I've only seen the photos. I actually haven't been to it yet, but it's definitely on the to-do list.
Oh, it's cool. I mean, we would camp, we would like, before we would go in on the hitches, we would stay at this little guard station right at the end of the road there. And I mean, it felt like 1800s, dude. You know what I mean? You're like laying there and it like smells a certain way. And like, I don't know. It was just super cool. You got the river outside. You're just like, wow, this is amazing.
Yeah. There's something about old cabin smell, right?
Oh yeah.
Like, luckily that we have quite a few around, you know, like I was in Woods Cabin today even. And like you walk in the door, you're just like, oh man, that old wood smell, it is awesome, man. And like I said, it takes you back and it makes you feel like you're getting to put your boots in the footsteps of like our ancestors, you know.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
Which is super cool. Especially out there. Like, I mean, being this podcast and just being the Forest Service in general, I think most of us who are in the Forest Service are we're aware of the history, and maybe some of us dive in a little deeper, like I try diving a little deeper, so you're always kind of, I think, thinking about, oh man, what were they doing here? And still, you're probably doing a lot, because you're looking at how the landscape was treated before you guys, and how you guys can maybe improve, or just keep on doing the great work that the folks before us did, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it's really cool as part of this job, because we use increment borers to core trees in order to get their ages. Oh, yeah. Which is really interesting, because essentially you're kind of like a detective. I mean, like, and I've been on the Bitterroot for, this is my 7th season, and I've worked like the whole length from, you know, the West Fork, East Fork, the whole Bitterroot front, Sapphires, everything. And,
yeah.
And it's all the same. I mean, all the trees are kind of the same age class, like cohorts, you know? And so that's kind of an interesting kind of correlation to see that, you know, just you're kind of looking at history. I don't know what the answers are, but you know, you're like all the pine of, you know, this size, there's basically kind of like a pre-European settlement cohort. And then you have, maybe like kind of late 1800s to, you know, your 1920s. And then you have, definitely a fire suppression. Then you can obviously see the fire suppression, like age class. And it's interesting. I mean, it's just, and it's right on. It's like spot on with, I think they're usually about 110, 120 years old. So it like really fits, you know, and you're like, oh, well, this would make sense. You know, it's kind of cool.
Yeah. It's cool. Cause like, yeah, 1910, you know, it's like when we started really, pushing the fire suppression pretty hard. Right.
Right. Like totally.
Yeah. The great burn. And like, oh man, like you said, like, if you got enough education on it, and or just a friend that has enough information, like even I've worked with this fellow named Brett out of Darby, and a lot of his background is in rec, but it's also in timber. So when we're doing the hazard tree assessments in the campground, and he is like looking at trees, and he starts kind of picking my brain on it. He's like, well, you see this, you know, like a lot of them have like a twin top, you know, like a fork, and he's like, why do you think that is? I was like, I don't know. Is that a disease? He's like, well, you know, there could be that. And then he had some other signs, like a bend in the tree. He's like, and they're all at the same length, the height. You know?
Right.
He's
yeah.
So that to me is a sign of like a heavy winter. And you probably could track it back to like whatever year that was, you know.
Oh, totally.
Probably from coring too, right? Like how old the tree is, and then kind of figure out like, well, maybe at this, there was this bad winter here, and that's why all these trees are kind of bent in that same direction.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, you can tell a lot. And like, yeah, I remember taking a class in college. It was actually a geology class, but we were looking at, like, you know, we actually went to this house that was for sale. Yes. And it was, like, probably the best thing I learned in college, you know. They're like, look at the trees. See how they're all curved? That means the hill's sliding down, you know. And you're like, oh, maybe I shouldn't buy this house, you know. Yeah. So, like, had some other knowledge, you know, applications. You know,
outside kind of funny. Work. Yeah, totally. All right. Something to keep an eye on.
Yeah, look at your surroundings. Look at the trees. Yeah.
And that, yeah, and health of the trees, right, too. Like, my brother ended up buying a place where I think they're like all hardwoods, probably like some kind of maple or something. Was that autumn blaze maple kind of variety, I think, you know.
Oh, cool.
Really colorful, you know, get that bright red in the fall. And they're all like doing really bad. And at first, you know, we were like, somewhere wrong with the groundwater around here or something.
Right.
But what it was, you know, I think after watching this old house, we figured out that they didn't quite do enough job of peeling back the grass. So the grass had grown right up to the base of the tree.
Oh, interesting.
And was robbing it of nutrients and water. Yeah. So like we peeled that back and built a little like barrier thing with the wood chips and stuff, you know. And after that, I mean, those trees came right back and fast. Yeah. Like, so because we did early spring, and then you know, a few of them that we thought were dead and gone had some buds on them, and then within the next few years they're looking great. But
yeah,
that was definitely something that crossed my mind. I'm like, because it was like a whole row and they're kind of near a power line. I'm like, you know, like going to extremes, I'm like, is that power line affecting it? Is the groundwater? And it's like, oh, no, it's just the grass isn't cut back enough, you know?
Yeah, no, and that's, I mean, what a satisfying feeling to be like, oh, man, we are about to lose these really beautiful trees, you know, and then we just fix this one thing, and now they're coming back, and then to actually have it work, that's wonderful.
Yeah, and it kind of hooked me, because, like, you know, you watch something, and you're like, oh, well, I don't know if this is actually going to work, and a lot of times I've had it where it doesn't work, and it's probably operator error on me, you know, not doing it quite right, but... being able to bring something back and, like, I don't know, get a little closer to nature a little bit, and kind of brought me into the, you know, wanting my own garden and a few of those things,
totally.
And so, it, you know, kind of helps you, I don't know, kind of shape your surroundings a little bit, you know? And that even applies to fire, too, if you're going to buy a house that's, like, in the woods and, you know, the trees are on top of the house and bushes and stuff. Like, if you're in a severe fire area, you know, higher fire risk area, then you might want to rethink that purchase maybe, or
right,
or do some stuff right away when you
have a wildland fire experience. You're like, oh man, we'll just do this and that and keep those drip torches ready, you know.
Cut some stuff back. And I think a lot of folks out here, like myself included, are like, oh man, I can make a chair out of that, you know, like,
oh yeah,
I gotta cut that thing away from my house anyways, you know, and like, maybe I can use that for something else, repurpose that wood.
Oh, totally. And then know that you like harvested it and you made something from it, and you're like, how about just that pride of, you know, building something?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, that's kind of my next phase in life. I think, you know, when I get 40, I think I'll be starting to get more into the furniture.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, that brings me to another question I had for you is, what's your favorite, like, tree? Like, if you could pick a favorite. Do you have a favorite, I guess?
I really like mountain hemlock. Mm. It's super pretty. It has a, what does it have? It doesn't have like apical dominance. Like, so like we were talking about, like even those broken tops, like, so when a tree loses its top, it will redirect the chemicals that essentially allow it to grow. It basically has these cells at the tip of the tree that can grow into like new cells and be different cells. They have ability to, I forget the name, but, anyway, this tree doesn't have that, so it has these, like, kind of a floppy top, and then so that the top grows, you know, and then it kind of flops over, and then a branch will then get that chemical, and then it'll grow the new top. So it kind of,
whoa,
it always reminds me of those like, maybe classic, like, Japanese paintings, you know, or they have the tree that looks all windswept, you know, and that's what they look like to me, and then they kind of look very, like a fractal, because of the way
the top just the keeps twigs, switching.
And the twigs, the way the leaves come out, look super cool. So that's my favorite tree.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah. Let's check that out. We have them around here.
We do. Yeah. Mainly in Idaho, but, I actually found them on this little weird little island in a lake up by Sealy.
That's so cool,
man. Yeah. And it was like, what is this tree doing? It was super bonsaied out, you know? Yeah. And I'm like, dude, this is mountain hemlock. Like, no way. And there was no mountain hemlock anywhere else around. I was just like, yeah, anyway, it's super cool.
How'd you get here, buddy?
Yeah, totally. You
know, like, that's what I do when I see something that doesn't belong. I'm like, hey.
Yeah, you're like, weird. Like, you made it here. Your seed flew or something brought you over here and stuck you here. You know,
yeah,
it's cool. But
stay
strong. They got them up in Idaho.
Oh, cool.
It's in northern Idaho, and they're up on the ridge lines. And it's just.
How big? Is it more like a bush, or does it get pretty big?
They can get big. You get like old growth stands of it where, you know, they're 20, 30 inches in diameter. And you get into these pure stands. I mean, it's a magical place for sure.
I check that. Yeah, I bet. That, man, and being a mountain hemlock, do they lose their leaves then?
No, they keep their leaves throughout the year.
Oh, really? Oh,
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Do they change at all, or just
no? Oh. They're just like just like we typically have, like western hemlock would be like a more dominant species, say on the west coast.
Oh, gotcha.
But it's just like the mountain variety, so it's a conifer.
That's a conifer. Oh, yeah. Gotcha. Yeah. And then what color is the leaf on it?
It's green. It's just green. Yeah, it's just like a normal looking tree, but it's just got some characteristics. And, you know, it's like everybody says, you know, oh, ponderosa pine or like western larch, you know, and yes, their favorite. Yeah, totally. You know, it's like, well, I like those trees, but you gotta pick something a little different.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. And that's why I like picking people's brains like yours, who, you know, you're out in the woods a ton. And then also, you know, being your background, being silviculture, like you're studying trees a lot. So I'm like, which ones do you like?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
I was
asking one of my friends, I can't remember how it came up, but he's a lookout in Idaho.
Oh, cool.
And Kevin Roach, great guy. He was actually on the podcast with his family a while back. And we were talking shop about trees. And he's like, yeah, I actually like yew trees. And I'm, no idea what it was.
Yeah.
And, like, I don't know how I've gone my whole life without knowing it. And then I was working with Brett. And I'm like, man, I've never seen a yew tree. And we're down in Blackberry Campground off Scalco. Yeah. And he's like, and we had talked about it the day before, I think. He's like, hey, there's a yew tree right there.
Yeah.
I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
Man, it's been right there. And I had no idea.
Yeah, totally. We have some spectacular stands of yew in like Bear Creek and different places. And like, I'm not sure if
they're native. Big Creek too, yeah.
Oh, totally, yeah. You go up in those drainages, and we kind of get this influence from northern Idaho.
Oh,
kind of drops in there, and so you'll get yew, and it's Pacific. I don't know. It's yew, yeah.
Yeah.
But
have you ever messed with any of them? Like, had to cut them or anything?
No, but the I know like the English longbow, you know, back in England was made of yew. They're yew, and so I assume that the Native Americans here made their bows out of yew. And so I've always wondered, and we have like, we have some up in those ranges that are perfectly straight, which isn't common. Like, I don't think it's usually kind of more like a shrub, but I found ones up there that were like 10, 15 feet tall, which is a perfect straight, you know, like, you know, maybe, yeah, like with the word working, when I get into my bow making phase, yes, you know, exactly, I can go up there and like harvest that thing and like get a perfect, you know, make a longbow or something out of it.
Yeah. How cool would that be, man?
That'd be fun.
Yeah. And especially something that you harvested yourself, you know, and created. And I think Kevin was telling me that that's what I think he was pretty sure that's what they were used for. Totally. Like you said, Native Americans. And then I think they're still making, like you said, like longbow type recurve things out of it now. And probably more of a longbow, huh?
Yeah, yes. I mean, I'm sure they did multiple different types, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's super cool. And it's just really slow grower, right? And it's kind of a hardwood.
Yeah. And I think they made some medicine out of it too. Taxol or something is in it. So yeah. I think they made some sort of pharmaceutical medicine out of it.
That's what I heard, because I was like, oh, can you just like chew on a leaf? And Brett was like, nope.
No.
It's toxic, but they do something to extract it. And then, like you said, and then it's like a pretty cool medicine. Yeah, I can't remember. Was it for cancer or something?
I think it might have been, yeah. It was a long time ago when I heard the thing.
But I know, yeah, I heard the other day. And man, I think that's what is like the best about our job is so many people come from all over. Like, you know, you were down in Southern Cal and then down in Fenn, and then you came here. You're probably somewhere between Fenn and here, or is this your next stop?
I've worked all over. Like, I worked, where was that? Went to Idaho, and then I went on a fire crew out of the Six Rivers up in Orleans.
Really?
Bluff Creek, that's where that UFO, or the Bigfoot. Is that one where you got the classic Bigfoot. Like, we went there, you know, it was pretty cool. And that's wild country. So that's on the Six Rivers. And then after that, what I go into...
Six Rivers is pretty cool. I fought some fire down there.
Oh, it's steep and Poison Oak. And just, yeah, rip. It just is always on fire.
It
you're
is,
like
dude.
You're like, every year it burns. It's a big fire. Just like, I mean, has it been... had to have burned all of it at some point. Right?
Yeah. Why does it keep coming back and burning?
Yeah, it's a wild spot.
Yeah, it grows so fast.
We go on a lot of crazy IAs there, which were interesting, you know.
Yeah.
A lot of it was arson.
That's what mine was. Yeah.
It was like retaliate, like crazy just stuff, you know. And you're like, you know, you're out there at night.
Yeah.
You know, and I was on like a saw team, you know. You're like, you go to swamp something and you pull it and it's like, you know, a 3-inch diameter vine of poison oak, you know, and you're just like, oh, you know, you like throw that to the side. You're just like, I can't believe it, you know.
Yeah, don't touch your face.
Like, yeah, don't touch your face, you know, that curious itch, don't scratch it.
Oh, totally, man.
Yeah.
You get those weird itches, right? And you're like, don't do it. Like, I think you can fight it off, maybe.
I was immune to it. Like, I don't know. I would like pet this dog that lived there, and I think somehow, because I got it once when I was a kid, and I got it like really bad.
Oh yeah.
And then somehow I was just like totally immune to that stuff there, so I was pretty happy about that.
Yeah, I heard that happen because I want to say it was my dad who had that happen to him when he was a kid, and then after that, it like his body like was like, oh, okay, we know what this is, and like stopped having the allergic reaction. Because I don't know if it got passed down genetically, because or somehow I don't have whatever reacts with it. Because the same, like I was sizing up this tree in Arkansas, I think it was, and it was just this vine was going up, and I didn't know what the hell it looked like.
Yeah.
So I'm like, kind of got my arm on, I'm swinging around, and I'm trying to see, like, it looked like it had a dead top and maybe a dead branch. I'm trying to get a better angle on it, and it's kind of on a little knob, so I'm having to, like, hold on to the tree and hang myself out. And one of the southern boys is like, man, that boy loves poison oak. And I was like, what? You know? And I was like, oh. But at that time, I'd been exposed to quite a bit. I'd already fought fire in California, I think, at that point. It's everywhere. The oil just gets on stuff. And so, like, I didn't have a reaction. But I'd get a little, like, that weird mystery itch, and I was like, I'm not gonna scratch that, because like I don't want to wake up a beast. So you know,
it feels so good
to scratch.
When you do, you're like, I remember getting it as a kid, I kind of like it went away, and then I was like, kind of missed it a little bit, you know. I was like, oh, that's weird, you know.
That's a good point, because like a mosquito bite, like you're not supposed to scratch and be like, oh man, it feels great when you so do good. Though
man, scratch that thing right off, you know.
Yeah,
don't
man,
you're bleeding, you're like,
it was worth it.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. That's pretty funny.
Yeah, and like you said, the oil, like, it's probably over that dog. And one of our friends, John Spencer, he was a jumper at NCSB, and he got a jump out of every jump base. And apologies if I've told the story on the podcast, but he had a jump out of every base. And Redding was the last, right, on his tour, I guess. And he'd been jumping for a while at this point. We're checking parachutes like day one, and the oil's so fine, you don't even see it, can't feel it. But it was all over those parachutes. Cause it's just, it's everywhere. And he had to go to the hospital because he had such a bad reaction to it. Dang it, man. I felt so bad for him. And I was like, and I know, you know, being the low man on the totem pole as a rookie, I had no idea what happened. You know, like no one said anything. I'm like, hey, where's John? Like, they told me, I was like, oh, man. I was like, heartbroken for him. Dang, dude. But also, that was like the, you know, one of many times where I was like, oh, man, it didn't affect me, I guess, you know?
Yeah, lucky. Yeah. Lucky to be that way, for sure.
Absolutely, because, man, it could be kind of anywhere, too. Like, I was out in eastern Montana, and a few kids on the Great Northern crew got, I've not been poison ivy, but I think they're kind of similar, you know, in the oils and how they affect you, you know? I think if you're sensitive to one, I think you're usually sensitive to the other one.
Yeah.
And, yeah, a few folks got it and then had to get like, all their stuff bagged up and a new sleeping bag, and because it, you know, you just can't get away from it once it gets on you, and it gets on everything. And we were on like day five of the fire assignment, you know, it was like, yeah, in it from then on.
Yeah, I think it's like very little amount of it can affect you. So you imagine you're just swimming in the stuff like constantly,
all
you
the
know,
time.
Just like, oh man,
yeah, cause it probably gets in the rigs and everything else because people brushing on it, and like you just don't even notice it. And at Six Rivers is kind of cool country though, huh?
That's wild, yeah. It's super cool. I mean, it was right there on the Cal Salmon. So this it was like, I think it's one of the last undammed rivers in California, at least.
Oh, I didn't know.
It was beautiful. I mean, it was wild back there too. I mean, they actually had like a full on like hippie commune.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it was wild, super wild country, and neat too. I mean, very rugged, very similar to here, I guess, in the like, you know. You're in, constantly working in 60%, 70% slopes, you know,
yes,
and like
dude.
It was cool.
Yeah.
I liked it.
Yeah. Like I said, kind of wild country. Yeah. Like the, you know, a few of the grow operations, like we got our in briefing of being like, if you go on a fire and this is what you find, make sure you just turn around and go the exact same route you came in.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
Copy that.
I think we did like fuels abatement around a buck.
Really?
Like, I mean, I'm assuming it was legal or something there, but I felt like it was almost just like a community. We were just like helping out around the community,
you know, totally.
And that's what they did, you know? And you're like, oh, wow, like this is really weird.
Yeah, totally. I'm like, I'm exposed to this being from Montana, you know?
They had a part of the fire. Like we'd have all these fires right there, right?
And yeah.
They're like, we're not sending anybody into this part of the fire, right? And they fly it the next day and they're like, there's line has been dug in this like super remote spot on the side of the hill. And they're like, that's really odd, you know?
Yeah.
And like, so somebody, not us, had fought the fire for us, you know? And it was like, that's crazy.
Did a good job.
Yeah, I think they did a pretty good job. I mean, I don't know if it held, but.
Yeah, man. Yeah, it sounds like, and that's the only time they really, I think, don't mind us showing up is when there's a fire in their vicinity. Like, because I think it was in Weaverville. One of the in-briefings I got when I was crew boss in the Great Northern was there's a spot called Post Mountain. It's basically a mountain that's all private. I mean, not basically, it is. It's a private mountain, and it's just a giant grow. And they hire these Hmong people to go up and take care of it, do all the cutting and whatever else operation they do there. And they're kind of primitive, so they cook over an open fire, and they probably don't have anything else to cook with. But, you know, in the heat of summer, once in a while, those fires will get away from them, and then, you know, they got a bad situation on their hands. So they're like, give me the whole rundown. Like, when you get the call, you'll know where you're going. There'll be a rendezvous point. You show up there, and then, like, a negotiator would show up and be like, hey, we're just fire folks here to help you. And then, like, they'll kind of, like, escort you in and then escort you out because, I guess, historically they had shot at some rigs that had a badge on the door. So
I could see that.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Like, make sure you, come in, check in, check out.
Yeah.
Copy that.
I'm actually really happy not to live there anymore just because of that. It wasn't that much fun. Like, one time during college, we were, like, preparing for some crazy adventure, and we're like, okay, we're going to hike from the, like, inland mountains back to the coast, you know?
Cool.
And you found so much tubing and different stuff the entire
irrigation,
time.
Right?
It's really nice not living there anymore because of that, actually, because it's frightening.
Frightening. I'm just trying to have an adventure. I'm trying to get some outdoors, you know? And oh, man. That's kind of my thought, too. You know, like, I had all these young folks that were in college, you know, like, in fresh to the Forest Service and fire, and I was like, man, I don't need these guys to go, you know, like on something like this and, you know, either ruin their experience or worse, you know? Yeah. So I was like, in my head, I was like, we'll see, you know, like if we get responded to this one, I might be turning this one down, you know? Cause I was like, that's not, even though if they send us home, they send us home, you know, at least everybody's safe. It's kind of my thought, but didn't have to worry about it. So that was nice. And, everywhere else we went, Weaverville was really nice.
Yeah.
So that was kind of cool. We got to run out to the ocean one time. Cause there's been some kind of event going on.
Oh, cool.
Cause they're like, we were just camping in a campground that they had closed because of all the fires. And then for some reason, they're like, you guys can't stay here one night or a weekend or something. And they're like, you guys need a hotel up. And we're like, oh, okay. You know, so but it was late by the time we were told. And it was like a Friday night. So we're heading towards Arcata.
Yeah. Totally, yeah.
Because that was the closest like hotels that we could find because we were calling around. And so we headed out that way, and it was super cool because like a lot of the folks hadn't seen the ocean because a lot of them are from Montana. So like we made a beeline for the Pacific.
Oh, sick.
And it was awesome, man. Yeah. Everyone's fire race. Everyone's boots and greens. And I just see like, and I'm one of the last people to leave because I'm, you know, making sure everyone's good to go, make sure everyone can swim, you know, make sure everyone's safe, buddy system, and make sure the rigs are good to go and we're in a good spot. So I was the last one to go to the water. And as I'm going to the water, there's just a line of clothes that are almost connected all the way to the ocean because people are just like throwing stuff as they were running.
Dude,
yeah, just diving in their underwear. Yeah. And I was like, oh, this is cool. And then I was like, oh, I'll dive in too. You know, so I jumped in too and I was like, this is great because you don't get those opportunities very often. And our hotel was like right there. So
yeah,
it was cool, man.
Yeah.
Great experiences, huh?
Oh, totally. I lived in Arcata. That's where I went to college.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Humboldt State, yeah. And so,
is it cool?
It was cool, yeah. I lived there for like 10 years. I mean, it took me way too long to finish that degree. And I lived there, you know, basically lived there and would go to Forest Service jobs. And
Doing life stuff, man. I was the same way, you know, like I went to college and wasn't quite sure what I was doing. And I started doing sports and then fighting fire and work and stuff. So, you know, it took me a little longer to get through mine as well, but
yeah,
you're doing things right.
Yeah, it's cool, good experience, you know. Always have a fond memory of that place, you know. Yeah, it's beautiful.
That marine layer came in pretty heavy on us that first night.
Yeah.
And I'd never seen anything like that.
Whoa,
I mean,
I kind of lost it, dude. It was so gray all the time.
Oh,
like right after college was done, man, I went and got a job in Arizona. And I was like, I remember getting there and I was just staring at the sky, like being like, it's a color, you know? Yeah. And then I was like, there's a lizard, you know? And I was just like, wow, cool.
This is amazing.
Yeah. So I haven't really gone back, but yeah, I was like,
I don't blame you, man. Yeah. Cause that inversion and stuff. And
it's so gray.
Yeah. Oh, I couldn't do it either, man.
And damp. Yeah. Everything's damp and like, it's moldy. Like,
yeah. Like really, really wet. Like I had never experienced, and I haven't since, like, you know, you go down south and the humidity gets pretty high. Like this was at like a whole nother level, you know, like, man, that morning would have made the South look like a Montana dry.
Yeah.
You know, it was wild.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe how soaked everything was in the morning.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
The secret is go in the fall, and then in the fall's best time. And then there'll be like a week of bad weather followed by a week of good weather. So if you can get after the end of that bad weather, and you can spend a week there, you'll have the most beautiful time. It's incredible.
Man. Yeah. Have to load the family in the old Airstream and
put
it, because that's what I want to do, is kind of cruise the coast one of these days, like Washington all the way down.
There's a super powerful spot at the Klamath River mouth.
Oh.
And it's called, the natives live there, it's the Yurok tribe, and they do these like salmon, if you can hit it at the right time, they do these big like salmon feasts where they're like cooking salmon on these like, just on the coals.
Oh, really?
Super nice. And then the beach there is just super powerful. I mean, it's got, basically, there's like rocks that are part of the, I think it's the oceanic crust. So it's like a convergence zone between the continental crust and the oceanic crust. And as I think what the oceanic crust is subducting underneath the lighter continental crust. And there's like chunks of rock that are these like layered, light green, kind of turquoise layered rocks. And I mean, you just walk north on this beach, go there, walk south on the beach, and it's an incredible experience. It's super beautiful,
cool
place,
man. Just kind of feel it in your soul a little bit when you're out there with the sound of the water.
Oh, it's super powerful because it's got, I mean, you don't want to swim there. It's like
gnarly.
Yeah, the riptide's really bad, but you can, basically it just dives right off. The beach just dives right off. So you can stand there and you can have what, you know, 8 to 10 foot wave face, like beach break. But it goes, it just launches up and then it hits and then it just shoots back out. So you're just standing there as like the whole ocean is just like having a giant wave in front of you and then it just crashes like, and it just goes right back out. It's incredible. It's
wild.
Really wild.
Yeah, yeah. That's so cool. So you could be like just bone dry while that thing's like right there.
Oh, totally.
Face.
Yeah. Wow. And it's kind of frightening.
Yeah, I bet. Man. Yeah. It's like, probably loud.
It's going to eat me, you know?
Yeah. Like a small tsunami. Yeah. Oh, man. Those experiences, man. Like, that's what, you know, part of the reason why I wanted to have you on too is like that kind of stuff, man. Just like try to get. Yeah, it's fun and get more people out and explore, right? Because that's so different from what you experience in Montana. You know?
Totally. Yeah. Yeah, it's wild. I mean, all the ocean's different. I mean, growing up in Southern California, the ocean is like, feels somewhat tame.
It does.
And then you get up in Northern California, like, I've tried to learn how to surf there, and it was mountains of water coming across. You're sitting out, and there's like, every about 45 minutes, there's like what I call a rogue set, and it's basically like all those wavelengths of water kind of coalesce. So you'd be sitting there kind of in the right spot to catch waves, but then all of a sudden there'd be these mountains of water coming across, you know, and you're like, oh, it's like outside, you're all paddling, you know, and you make it over the first couple, but then the third or fourth one, typically, I mean, you're just, anyway, it's wild. It just eats you. Like, you know,
And you just get like May tagged up in it.
Oh, totally. Totally. No, dude. One time I was like, because, you know, SoCal, you could like ride the white water. Like, you're a kid, you got a little boogie board, you know, and the wave crashes and then the little white water and it just kind of shoots you out, you know.
Yeah,
so
I'm thinking,
I got this old like 70s Hawaiian gun surfboard, like super pointy, heavy on the glass, made for like big wave riding in Hawaii from the 70s, single fin. I mean, it's just like,
yes, dude.
Probably would have broke, you know, if I like knew how to use it, you know, to remember this wave, and it crashes. And I'm like, oh, I could just turn around and I'll just ride the whitewater back in, right?
Yeah.
So I do that, and then, you know, 10-foot amount of whitewater shoots out in front of me.
Oh, no.
And then I'm just in darkness. Oh, no. You know, like I see the white, and then I'm in darkness, and I'm holding on to this massive, somewhat deadly board. It's like super pointed at the end, you know, I'm holding on to it. And we like, basically, I like go down, and I'm like riding this thing down into the depths, you know what I mean? And I'm like, where am I going, you know? And then just getting tossed, and then just length, you know, just end over end, just holding on to this thing, just be like, I can't believe this is happening, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, I survived, but it was
did it spit you back out towards the beach, or what?
What happened? I don't remember. I think what happened was I didn't really know about the riptides.
Oh.
So I think I was trying to paddle back at the beach, and that doesn't work. You have to, like, ride a wave into the beach.
Absolutely, man.
And so I paddled and paddled and paddled, and then I think I might have got drifted into where there was a jetty.
Oh.
So the current's coming from the north and hits that jetty, and then it just pulls it out. And if you know what you're doing, you just use that
to get over
to basically just get in it and it takes you out. You know, you don't do any work. So I think I was ended up like paddling against that.
Damn it.
Until I just, totally didn't know anything, dude. Then basically I ended up on the rocks with the board, just like, oh my God, you know.
I survived.
Yeah. And that was kind of the fun part of the whole thing, because when you would get back to the beach, like, because one, they have great white sharks.
Oh,
they'll eat you, you know, or like take a limb or something.
Yeah.
And they don't really report like how many people actually get munched, you know. It's like you just kind of hear about it, but really then you start asking questions, you know, and people are like, oh yeah, no, god, you know. So anyway, you got that, and then got the riptides, got these giant waves, and then you just like, when you get back to the beach, you like never felt better to be on like solid ground your entire life, you know? So it was kind of, you got more of an adrenaline rush, I think, out of it, you know?
Yeah,
it's kind of pretty fun.
Yeah, totally, man. And especially looking at it that way, man, I think I have the same outlook on life, where it's like, you know, damn near down probably, but you're like, man, that was kind of cool though.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I made it, you know. Like, you know, if you don't get that, you don't get that duality, or, you know, the difference between, you know.
Right, like the cloudy days make the sunny days that much better, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, totally. So the same. And man, I think I'm trying to think, I think it was a guy on Rogan podcast was like, you know what? You got to put on your to-do list every once in a while. Don't die today.
Should
be on your to-do list every once in a while.
Yeah.
I was like, damn, that's a good way to look at life.
Yeah.
You know, like, because otherwise, if you kind of get stuck, because everyone can get stuck in a rut, you know, just going through the motions, even if it's like an active lifestyle, but you're still kind of doing the same things every day. It's like, you need to get out and reminded, like, you're still alive, and you know, life is still amazing and deadly, you know?
Yeah, like, totally. Yeah.
Yeah, I had some experience, but I had like a foamy board, so it was a little more buoyant, you know, and a lot more forgiving. And I think it had 3 fins, and I ended up just holding on for dear life, and it sent me, I think it was at Trestles in Southern Cal. Oh, you ever been there?
Yeah, I know of it. Yeah.
I want to say it was there, or maybe the Cove.
Yeah.
And it like didn't know how to stop, you know, so I was just holding on, and I just, luckily it just kind of like beached me real hard, but I broke all the fins off it.
Yeah,
I was borrowing it. I was like, oh man, I'm so sorry. Luckily they're replaceable, but I was like, I had no idea. So like, I felt really bad. I was like, do I need to buy you a surfboard, man? Like, I think I just broke yours, because I had no idea how things work. He's like, oh no, man, I got some extra fins. It happens all the time.
Right.
Like, oh. But that foamy was so forgiving, man. It was awesome. Like, being out there on like a raft, you know?
Oh, totally. Better to get hit in the head with a foam board than a, you know, hard fiberglass board.
Yes, yeah, totally, man. And I've made mistakes surfing too, where I was like, I finally caught one. Like, I was struggling trying to catch one. I finally caught one, and this was at the Cove, and I rode it damn near in. I was just like pumped, and then like when I got to where, you know, they kind of died out, and I just kind of flopped off and looked back out and at all my buddies who were out there, both my brothers and a bunch of his veterinary vet school buddies were there, and I'm looking at all of them, and they're like, looks like miles away. And I was like, oh, that was a mistake.
You know? Oh, yeah. But you got a good ride, right?
Yeah, I got a great ride. Yeah. But it was the first wave I caught of the day. And I was like, oh, man, I'm going to wear myself out getting back out there.
Oh, yeah, totally. So, yeah, it was probably worth it.
Oh, it was, man. It was such a beautiful day. There was like no one there but us. And it was super cool, man. It was like one of those surfer movies you see back in the 90s,
yeah,
you know?
Totally. Yeah.
Where you got like the whole break to yourself. Right. You know? That was awesome, man. So, whereabouts in Arizona did you end up?
So then, where'd I go? I went, after that fire crew, I went to Powell.
Oh, you're in Powell. Oh, gotcha.
And that was sweet. And that's where I kind of actually learned that I wanted to do forestry.
Oh, yeah.
Because we would just basically get just dropped off out of the truck.
Yes.
And then get picked up at the end of the day and you just go collecting data and stuff.
Very cool.
I thought
cool.
That was awesome. And then I finally finished college. And then.
Were you by yourself when you were doing that out of Powell?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we had a crew, like 4 dudes, and. You know, we just
Would you guys each get dropped off in a different spot?
Yeah, totally. Oh, it was awesome. So then you just basically crank out all these plots and then go hang out like at the creek for an hour or something. And
wait,
hike
your
back
ride?
Up. Oh, it was awesome, dude. And then come back at your ride. And I was like, this is like, I love this. This is awesome. You know? And it was just data collection and doing stand exams and stuff. And,
dude.
And that's where we started doing white bark pine climbing. And the guy would get us, he'd always fund like a helicopter ride to go up to these like high peaks and climb white bark. So that was incredible. It's like, this is sick.
What an experience, man.
Oh, totally. Like, I mean, like, landing on some mountain peak, getting all your climbing gear out, climb all day. He shows back up, he just peels off the top of that cliff, you know? You're just like, I can't, this is awesome.
Yeah, it's like a movie itself, right? Hey, my ride's here, helicopter, you know?
Oh, it's beautiful. Yeah. And then was like, I should probably get some different experience. Like doing timber marking, so I went down to the Coconino, just saw the Flagstaff at Blue Ridge.
Oh, yeah.
Which is super sweet, and...
That's cool, man.
That's beautiful. And then got my first permanent over on the North Kaibab, if you've never been there, it's a fantastic spot. It's on the north rim of the Grand Canyon.
Yes.
It's
Is Sholo near there?
Oh,
maybe not. Maybe Sholo's a little south.
I think that might be south, but this is like, you're just right up. It's called the Arizona Strip. You're right up along Utah there, and that's a fantastic spot. And the north rim is like... I can't remember how high up it is, but it's fairly high in elevation. So you're getting up into like subalpine fir and spruce and all these things. And they got aspen. Damn. It's like essentially what it is ancient lake bottom.
Oh, really?
Got uplifted. And so there's like little shells and like fossils and stuff like all over the place. And it's just really, I mean, they grow like giant bucks, like giant, I think it's mule deer.
Oh, yeah.
And because of that calcium, the calcium carbonate that the limestone's made up of, it feeds trees, which, because it's like used for like cell walls and stuff. And so they just have giant ponderosa pine, and they actually cut that place very extensively back in the day. And you can't even tell. I mean, it's a pretty amazing spot.
That's
cool,
man.
And then the bucks there, just like, you see everything, just monster bucks, dude. Like racks so big that they kind of look stupid. You know, you're like, what is that for? You know?
Yeah, like, you're like, something happened to you, man.
Like, yeah. You're like, you know, atypical, you know, you're like, whoa, dude, you're giant.
Yeah. Like, it must hurt your neck. You know, like, you see him walking around.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like, as a hunter, you're probably like, I don't even know. I want to shoot you, like, this is, you know, like,
oh yeah,
big beautiful buck like that?
The old guys, the old bucks, they go sit in the sagebrush down in the flats.
Oh yeah.
And just lay there like super flat. So you'd be like driving along and you kind of see some horns, and then that's where all the big bucks were. They were just all in the flats because they knew, you know, don't.
It's crazy all the big animals down there. Like the elk get massive down there too, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Like, one of my first fire assignments was on the engine, and it was my second or third, but either way, it was like my first couple years of fire. And we went to the Wallow Fire in Arizona.
Yeah.
And we just stopped at some random gas station to fuel up, and I went inside to take a piss and I think get like some caffeine, you know, and snacks. And in the random hole in the wall gas station, the whole thing was rimmed like almost like you walk in like an old saloon, you know, like wood paneling, but with like these record elk.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe a few deer in there, but I just was like focused on the elk, and I was like, whoa. Like, I had no idea, because, you know, being in Montana, it's like, I'm young enough and dumb enough not to realize that elk could be in other places.
Right.
I was like, whoa, where are these? You have elk down here? These are massive, you know?
I don't know. I mean, I'm pretty sure this is true, but what I was told was that they brought those elk in on a train, and they dropped them off in Winslow, Arizona, and they just let them out, and they just went out. I think they had a smaller elk variety that was there, and then they let these other guys out there, and now, I mean, they're everywhere.
Yeah,
that's pretty cool. I mean, it would have been fun to have got to hunt them down there, you know.
Yeah, but, totally. I mean, like a ton of meat and this, you know, beautiful rack and stuff too, man, and great meat too. I mean, like, you hear like Steve Rinella from Meat Eater, all these guys talk about like just that kind of clean energy you get from, you know, minimal fat and just like a great protein source too, and the flavor, you know, you get a different flavor. And kind of same with like a little bit with bison too. It's like a leaner cow, you know.
Yeah, they said they had them on the North Rim, which I never saw one, but you can get a tag, like you got an over the counter tag for one on the North Rim, and I always thought that would be fun to find that elusive creature, because I think you would have had to have gone through the Grand Canyon to get.
Really?
I mean, you'd have to cross the Colorado River at some point. Oh. So that's kind of a rogue, you know, like animal, just like, all right, I'm going to cross. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if that's 100% true. Maybe they just came down from the north, but
I don't know.
Yeah,
I like
pretty interesting.
Yeah, I like your story better. I like to, you know, that, like something like that, you know.
It's like maybe hike the trail. I don't know. I mean, Grand Canyon's rugged.
It is really rugged, man.
I could see him doing it, though.
Yeah.
Like, just go down the trail, because they're on the south rim of the Grand Canyon, like a ton of them. Like, I mean, they're like kind of like a Yellowstone thing where they're just like hanging out on the side of the road.
Oh, I didn't know.
Drive by and tourists taking pictures of them and stuff, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, one day one of them just walked down that trail, got to the bottom. It's like, let's walk up.
Yeah, let's see what's on the other side here. Yeah, go check this out. Yeah, and probably, you know, thinking of no competition. You know, you got these other folks you're competing with over this way. Let's try this side of the canyon.
Yeah.
Man, it's some rugged country, though. Yeah. But cool country, though. Like, I fought some fire down in Camp Verde. South of Sedona.
Totally.
And we were on the Coke a little bit and on the Prescott. You know, it was like a shared district with two different forests, I guess. And that was super cool, man. There was like really cool rocks we saw and cool country. I kept looking for a damn Gila monster and never did find one.
Oh, I know. It would be so cool to see one of those.
Yeah, I guess they're super elusive, though. Like when I was talking to the local fellows down there, I think it was actually the Whimsical Woodsman was one of the fellows I worked with. Awesome guy. He did a calendar. So folks interested in the Whimsical Woodsman, he did a calendar, like a calendar shoot and a calendar for a fundraiser.
Oh, cool.
And it's super cool. He's this big bearded Viking looking fellow.
Oh,
just
nice.
Super funny, super nice. Just, man, he's got a lightning foot because he's awesome at Foursquare.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
nice,
he's
dude.
Really good, dude. Like, deceiving. And not bad at volleyball either. So we played a little bit of that when we were down there. But I think I was talking to him about Gila monsters, and he'd been down there a long time, and I think he'd maybe seen one.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm gonna see one. I never did.
Oh, it'd be amazing to see one. What is it? They bite you and they won't let go or something weird.
Yeah, I think so. And they got some kind of like venom or bacteria on their jaw, so they
just nasty little creatures.
Nasty little buggers, but, but kind of pretty in the same way. You know?
Yeah, it'd be sweet to see one. I bet like going out and look for them at night would probably be the key.
Oh yeah, I bet. Yeah, night hunters maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think they're not as big as people say they are. I think that's another issue. Like,
right.
I think, you know, the movies and stuff, you know, well, there's that old black and white that was like Attack of the Gila Monster or something.
Yeah,
giant
yeah.
Godzilla Gila Monster thing. So I think in my brain, I was picturing like this Komodo dragon looking.
Yeah, at least like this big, you know, at least like a foot long, you know. But yeah, if they were smaller, then
I know, I'd
be looking for something different, and then your eye would attract to it, you know.
Yeah, totally, man. Yeah, because like, was it, Alabama, where my mom lived in Huntsville? There was a ton of lizards cruising around, the little guys, and they're, but they're kind of like shooting. So they catch them on the corner of your eye and a little blue tail on them or red tail. But, yeah, I think the Gila monster was, because, you know, practically thinking, like, all right, it's decent size, but I think it's a little smaller. And the camouflage, because the color of it is really good, too. So, so then you went, I lost track of where you, how you ended up your timeline. So you went from Powell down there?
Next? Yeah. I jumped around quite a bit. So, yeah, and then I got that perm, and then I was like, oh, I got a perm, you know? Yes. So, like, and I wasn't making no money. You know, it's like a GS5, 13, 13, you know? So I was like, I need to get a job that pays a little bit more. So then...
it was really hard to get a perm back then, so you kind of took what you could get.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, I worked for it. Like, I was shotgunning out applications. I think I had put out, like, God, like 125 applications. I ended up getting that job on the North Kaibab because I went up there.
Oh, yeah.
And I would, like, I was kind of figuring out, like, if I put... I kind of had a slogan. So I was like, well, like, it wasn't a slogan, but it was like, I was like.
Like a pitch.
Yeah, like a pitch. I'd be like, okay, like I said, like, oh, you know, I got to, you know, I just want to come up, you know, put a face to a name or something. Yes. And then I remember when I got up there after I got the job, the guy kept saying that, like, oh, it was really good. You came up, put a face to a name. Then, so then the other one was, got to take the bull, grab a bull by the horns or something. I said it during this like interview, you know? Yeah, and then I said, so that was my job. I got that in Gunnison. So the next place I went was Gunnison, Colorado.
Oh, cool.
And they kept saying that too. Oh yeah. You got to take the bull by the horns or something. And I was like, yes. Okay. So that's the way to do it, is to like come up with this little catchphrase, you know?
Yeah. Something to stick in their brain. Yeah. Right? And then they start using it and probably not even really thinking, you know?
Yeah, it worked, you know, and I got the job, and it was sweet. Colorado, that Gunnison was sweet. I mean, we were like setting up timber sales, like 12,000 feet. I was like laying out scent timber sales and like, I don't know if I should have been doing it, but I was up there like laying out timber sales and like blizzards and stuff. Oh, like really? in the when I first got there, you know, and it was like those experiences where you're like, this was awesome. You know what I mean? Like I made it back, like everything was cool, but like you don't get to do that in most jobs, you know? Yes. So like laying out all these timber sales at like 12,000 feet. And I got really strong there. I mean, it was beautiful. We did a huge amount of, we put up like 2,500 acres. Jeez, in one season with like, I hired a crew, I think of four. I made them camp out, but we camped out in this town, and they were all crying about it, you know. But it was actually really sweet, you know. Yeah, like, oh god, dude, the stars, man, it's insane. The stars in Colorado, you wake up and you're like, there's stars behind the stars that you don't normally get to see. And there, I mean, it was incredible. I mean, I swear, dude, the Milky Way had like, you know how they like color tint those space photos.
Yeah,
I swear that was real. Like there were like pinks and things like that, and you were just like, I can't believe I'm seeing this.
Yeah, man. Cool. Yeah, with no like light pollution or anything like that, and being maybe a little closer, being higher up,
really
too,
high
right?
up. Yeah.
Oh, that's cool, man.
Yeah,
I won't be surprised there was little hints of color in there. You know,
it seemed like there was. It was cool.
Yeah, because I mean, well, I don't know. Maybe they just color tint them for like, you know, effect. But like you see like the. Was it like the nebulas and stuff that right. these like cool colors coming off in galaxies? It's like, I mean,
I think
it
was
see
real,
a little bit
dude.
Of it.
It looked real. Yeah. You know, and it was, I mean, there were so many more stars. I mean, 10 times, 100 times more stars, you know.
Oh, isn't that like, awesome, man?
Sweet.
Oh, I love that, dude. Yeah. That's what's cool about like just life in general, man. Like you go somewhere and you get a whole different view of the world, like a view of the stars versus even being here. You know, we got a pretty good view of the stars out in Montana, but we got a little bit of light pollution too.
Yeah.
I think sometimes it gets funneled in a little bit if you have like a big town, like we got Missoula not far away, or even grow up in Whitehall. Like, we have Butte, and you know, Butte's got pretty big mountain range around it, and but it kind of like still kind of boils out of the light, does.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember thinking like from Lord of the Rings, like Mordor was kind of like this like glowing light, it was like that kind of looked to me as a kid. I was like, oh man, old Mordor over there looking like Butte, right. You know,
yeah,
Butte looking
dude,
like it,
dude, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Then I got to Montana. That was my next job. Was in Montana, out of the BLM.
Oh, really?
Yeah, out of Missoula.
Out of Missoula. Oh,
yeah,
cool, man.
And it was sweet. Yeah, like I did the thing.
Great office.
Oh, it was awesome. It was awesome. It was a good time.
Yeah, I like that spot. Was it so a little different? Like switching from federal estate? Was it? Like...
Or with the BLM, just to the Department?
Oh,
of
BLM.
Interior.
Sorry, you're at BLM. Yeah, sorry.
But yeah, it was hugely different.
Yeah, because you were right there by the fort, right?
Yeah,
at the fort.
Yeah, the BLM
great spot
tends to kind of slide on the radar a little bit better than the Forest Service, and so it was really cool. Yeah,
totally, man. Especially there, it's a little smaller, and I did a detail of the fort in 2017 when the Lola Peak fire went. And,
fun!
A few of the BLM folks came over and worked with us, which is kind of cool. Yeah. like on their days off. So I think they're doing like 410s. And one of the fellas named Paul, did you ever?
Yeah, Paul Scar. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, we're calling him BLM Paul.
Yeah, dude. Paul's still there, man.
Is he?
Yeah.
Oh, I've been meaning to reach out. He's got cool stories too, huh?
Oh, he's got great stories. Paul has been like, Paul has lived a very awesome life, done a lot of traveling. Like, and yeah, you should get him on here. He's got pretty wild stories over in like Cambodia and South Vietnam, you know, Vietnam and stuff. And
yeah, because so. Do you remember he did that talk? It was kind of like a podcast deal, but it was like the Wilma was hosting it, where it was like come a story. It was like,
cool. I remember that.
Yeah, I remember something like story time at the Wilma or something cooler than that.
Yeah.
And he had a super cool story for one of his trips where he about got robbed and
I ended up some like poker contest, like someplace you just kind of wouldn't want to find yourself, you know. And he was there handling it pretty good.
Yeah, he did well because the whole time, like in my head as he's telling the story, I'm like, it's like a slow train wreck. You're like, what are you doing? Turn around. Yeah. Don't go in there.
Like, they're gonna rob you. they're gonna take all your money. You know, like you might die.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, oh man, how does this get better? You know, and it all worked up. It was like, oh man, I mean, they're really putting a hell of a scam on. You know, like,
oh totally.
Amazing, he didn't fall. Really, a smart dude. So, like,
yeah, he survived it.
Yeah, he survived it. Yeah, because I think he was on his way to medical school. But I'll probably save that story for when I have him on. And yeah, I got to bug him. Great guy. Man, yeah, great office. And then you went from there to Steve I,
yeah, totally.
Oh,
good.
Nice, man. Yeah. And man, I also want to talk too about like some of the stuff you can find in the woods. Because one of the first stories, I think, when I first met you, you were talking about finding an Indian post office, right? Post box is post office.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think it was on the 500 road. I call it just called the 500 road, but it was the trail to the Buffalo for the Nez Perce. It would go, I think, between is it Kamiyai?
Oh yeah,
something like that. And then it runs all the way over to Lolo Pass, and then they must have taken probably some other ridge lines down, maybe through that. I forget the name of those roads, but
yeah, I know what you're talking about. I can't think how to describe it. I know the terrain, you know.
Yeah, but I think they at one time they had more of them, and they got vandalized, and then that one just in the, you know, at the end, like I found it, and I'm pretty sure it was a real one, you know.
That's cool,
really,
man.
Powerful spot. And
yeah,
I took a archaeologist from the BLM to go look at it on one weekend, you know, and see what they thought, you know.
Yeah.
And there was the lichens were growing between the rocks. So it was like stacked rocks, and they were probably maybe 8 foot in diameter by about maybe 5 feet tall, perfectly stacked rock, like solid thing of stacked rocks.
Oh.
And then the lichen was actually, I guess that's how you can kind of tell how old it is. If the lichen is growing between, like, over the rocks, then that means it's older. It was like old enough for the lichen to, like, actually go across rocks that were separate.
Yeah.
I thought that was cool.
That's really, and lichen's pretty slow grower.
Totally, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really just neat to kind of just, there was a, when it going up to it, it appeared as if there had been a trail that like hadn't been used in a long time, but was used heavily in the past.
Yeah.
And that was the part that was kind of like, my first indication was like, oh, this is kind of weird, you know, like, and then I found the thing and I was like, wow, this like might be the real deal.
Dude.
And anyway, it was neat to think of like these people coming through the woods, and that road itself looks, it's just like a snake of ridges that just winds its way through like the deep, dark woods, you know? And
so
you're just
cool.
Like, it's so cool when you're like standing on some of the, I think there's a nice lookout. I don't remember the name of it, but there's a really cool lookout there that you can go up to the top of. And it's probably like a quarter of a way or maybe almost midway to, what is that? Kamiyai.
Oh yeah.
And you, from there, you can really see it. And you're just like, this is sweet.
That is so cool, man.
So cool, yeah.
Yeah, that was like the first story I think you told me after I met you. I'm like, man, I got to pick Mike's brain more because I'm part of Nez Perce and I didn't know about these post office boxes.
Right.
Like, because it was like a check in, check out, right? Like, you had your like totem or, you know, whatever your symbol was that like kind of represented you, right? And you'd leave it if you went out
That's
or something.
The story,
right?
I heard was you would leave something there that your family would recognize you by. And so if you went out on the hunt, you know, the buffalo hunt in the plains, and something happened to you, or maybe I guess what happened to maybe the whole hunting group, potentially, obviously, you know, if you didn't have survivors coming back that could tell the story, you know, like they would know that you didn't pick up. Like, so then if you came back, you'd take your thing that represented you, and then you'd go see your family and everything.
Kind of like checking back in.
Yeah, and I don't know if that's just what I was told, or that's at least how I remember it being told.
It's
so
a great
know.
Story. Don't let the truth get in the way of a great story,
right?
Right?
Yeah, totally.
I'm a total believer in that, dude.
Yeah.
And I was like, that is interesting, man. And I just, you know, I think I've said it on the podcast before, like my family somehow got separated from the Nez Perce tribe, and my great grandma ended up on, or my great great grandma ended up on like this Hill 57 in Great Falls, which is like a pseudo reservation. So don't really know a whole lot of history. And at the time, unfortunately, it was like, it was looked down upon to be native. So right. like, my grandmother would go and do the, most of the shopping, cause she was half white and, looked more white. So, she, you know, you'd go to the grocery store and stuff for yeah. her mom. And, so like, wasn't like, proud to pass on anything. So right. don't know much. You
yeah.
know?
Yeah. I wonder how you can find out more. I mean, is it through,
I don't know. Like I traced it back a little bit, and that's how I found a little bit more on the Hill 57 and stuff. And, there's some kind of cool history with Hill 57. I even there's a PBS special about like a peace flag that is was kind of getting fought over for a little bit and like preserved, and it might be like one of the oldest, something like some history behind it being like a super old flag, and it's pretty cool. And but yeah, so I didn't know much, right? So like talking to you, and then talking to my friend Buck Lunick, who was on the podcast, and you know, he was telling me about the Appaloosa horses, and
oh, yeah.
yeah, I was like, and I'm familiar, but didn't know much about it, you know. And then, yeah, he filled me in with that, and it was a cool story, you know, like of how he thought Nez Perce came to have Appaloosa horses, because most of the people around here had these little like Spanish style,
oh,
like, tiny little horses, and Appaloosas are good sized horse, you know.
Where was the Appaloosa from? Was that down by like Comanche, Texas type style, or?
Well, yeah, he said that no one, yeah. as far as he knows, no one really knows where yeah. the Appaloosa came from. So he said, he's like, I believe they prayed for him, and
yeah,
that's. I was like, I like that. I'm gonna go with that.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, I mean, it's like. It's interesting because you have the story of how the natives, you know, the Anglo story, or the, you know, the white people story of how the natives got the horses.
Yeah.
And then the natives were like, we have always had the horse.
Yes.
But then when you look at the story of, you know, they say, okay, so there was the Spanish and they had horses, and then basically like one, you know, native guy was like, oh, I'm cool, I'll be cool, I'll take care of the horses, you know, I'll like, and learned how to like ride them and breed them and do different things. And yeah. then was like, all right, see you suckers. Like, and like took off with a bunch of them. And then like, that's how they spread.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then when you look at the skill level at which the natives like took these horses, and within a very short amount of time, we're just mastering riding them like to a really, really large extent. I mean, yes. they're like just some of the crazy, you know, riding bareback, shooting under the horse's, you know, neck yeah. just like super crazy stuff. You
hanging
know,
out with one arm, yeah.
Yeah, totally. Just like fully like in tune with this animal.
Yeah, like you a know? Symbiotic relationship, right?
Absolutely, yeah. right? You know, and the animals probably sense that as well. Like that, like, hey, these guys are cool, or I don't know. It's because then I was listening to something about like the introduction of the horse in like Europe and different places. And it was like, these people didn't know how to ride these horses for like, I mean, they took them like 500 years to figure out where the saddle went, you know, weird stuff like that. Yeah. Where just like, you know, so I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah. That is interesting, man. Yeah. Like in, yeah, most of the folks, at least by that time, like you said, were even if it's just like a little tiny cavalry saddle, we're using the saddle and, you know, probably really dependent on the stirrups. Or like you said, a lot of the natives were just throwing maybe a blanket on and throwing a leg over and going, you know?
Yeah, which is like pretty radical to be able to do that within a very short amount of time, you know, like to yeah. learn those skills.
Totally. And I it's think, interesting. Yeah, I want to say, and maybe this is just like a weird theory that I heard, but I thought someone told me that like the Avatar is kind of a similar story of like the natives, you know, and like people coming in and like taking their precious land. And then they, cause all the, whatever that other culture is, the blue people have a like the symbiotic relationship with their whole planet, right? And they have these like horse things they ride, and they have this like deep connection with them. And that's why I always kind of chose it to be. And I don't think it's specific to native folks either. I think anybody could have it. It's just the native folks kind of cultured it more.
Yeah, totally.
Because I think, could you look back far enough in just in my own little research, and maybe this is the way I want it to be, so that I believe it. But like, you know, like, all these cultures had like these vision people who would like, you know, like help tell the future or give guidance, you know, yeah. And like, the Irish had druids, you know, and the natives had some people too, that I think each tribe had somebody who like was kind of a visionary person. And I think, yeah, man, like, I think that's in all of us, right? Like, I've,
oh yeah, yeah, totally.
My friend Randy's going to come back on, and we're going to talk a little bit about that, about like having like some very vivid dreams, you know, that like deja vu moments, you know, like I even had one recently, like a year ago where it like, I even like paused. It was real life. Like I paused and like, I've been here before. Well, you know, like the exact same, wearing the exact same stuff, same scene. I was in the same exact place. And I was like, oh, you know, and maybe it was getting a little woo woo, but I was like, I don't know, man. I believe there's another layer to things that in our daily lives we're getting a little too busy for.
So, absolutely. Yeah. Like,
and I think you tap into it too. That's what I want to talk to you a little bit about too, you know, like, and having like, you know, your moments out in the woods. And like, I think that's what helps when you get to get out there and be quiet, and our job helps with that a little bit. Cause if you're, you know, sometimes you're hiking to a project or just maybe going to clear some trail, whatever you're doing, where you end up having some time with yourself out there on the job. And I don't know, you just feel like you get a little deeper connection with nature.
Yeah. I mean, the Indian post office box thing, I told you that story, which was kind of like a vision where I like went up to the rocks, came back down and had this really spooky feeling as if something was like watching me or something was about to happen.
Oh yeah.
And, it was getting dark and there was a little chipmunk sitting on the log and like maybe 5-10 feet from me. And he's looking into the darkness. Oh, and I'm thinking, that's weird. He's not looking at me. He's looking at the darkness, you know? And like, and that's when I closed my eyes and I saw that vision of the natives like walking up in buckskin, you know? And it was, and I don't know. I absolutely do believe that. I don't know. The older I get, the more experience that I have, I somewhat wonder if this is just a dream in some senses, you know, that this isn't 100% reality, and that there is stuff beyond this, just this experience, you know?
Yeah. There's even theories about our dreams, right? Like we're, you know, like if, you know, if the soul's real and it's just like, we're like this shell of, you know, meat and bone and fluid, and you know, when it rests, you know, like it does every night, whatever else, another door opens up and you know, your spirit goes into that, wherever that is. And maybe that's real for that time being, you know, the 6 hours, 8 hours, however much sleep you're getting.
Oh, totally.
And then you flip back into this, you know, during the day. So, I mean, who knows? Like, no one really knows. So like, I try to keep an open mind with all that stuff, man. And I think I like the idea of having that connection, you know, like you were up there and just out of the blue, you weren't looking for it. And all of a sudden you found the post office box. You have this connection, you know, like with another animal that was like paying attention to what you're paying attention to. So you're like, this is not just in my head, you know, like he's looking the same thing. And then you close your eyes and get to go to a different little spot for a minute, you know? And
That was interesting. And I got on my dirt bike, man. I rode out of there as fast as possible.
I bet, man. Like, imagine that'd be kind of overwhelming. And one of my really good friends, who was on the podcast a while back, we were talking about like, you know, a lot of people are looking for some other kind of intervention to get to a different realm space. And he's like, man, and he does a lot of sweats and, you know, like sweat lodge stuff.
Yeah.
He's like, I don't know, man. He's like, I think it's easier to tap into it and you get a better experience if you just go into like a sweat or, I think he did a 24-hour fast in the sweat lodge, but I don't think it was actually on. I think it was just like that complete darkness submersion stuff. And then, eventually your brain starts to wander. I mean, even like the Sundance, right? Like, you know, you're hanging out by those hooks and you have a vision when you're out there and you kind of get off to a different realm, you know?
Yeah. That's hardcore.
That is hardcore. I don't know if I'll ever, I know I'll never experience that, dude. That's,
oh, you could try, man. I mean, you could go for it. I bet it would take a lot of mental preparation to really make it through that. But I mean, that would be a worthy goal.
That is true, man.
Really stick bones through your pectoral muscles, and then you basically just
dangle
until you just rip them out of your body, you know?
I think it can take days, right?
Yeah. And you're fasting. I mean, you've been probably, who knows how long you've been fasting up to the point of doing that.
Right. And then while you're hanging, you're not getting water, food, or anything, right? It's just you out there. And
That's radical.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
A lot of that stuff's like, it's just getting you to the point of almost death, right?
Yeah.
You know, and then that's the veil they talk, you know, the thin veil between life and death, you know? Yeah. They're like, you're getting right to that point.
That's a good point, man.
And you're like, you know, and then surviving, you know, and then taking whatever out from that you can.
Yeah, and in universe, spirit world, or whatever kind of presents you with some information, typically, I think that's kind of a lot of the visions and our seers or whatever, you know, like kind of a label you put on those folks, whether I think, you know, kind of whatever tribe or, you know, group of folks that it came from. I think everyone had like a different name for it. And however that visionary or seer got to the point where they could see things. And I mean, my brother read the book Flight of the Nez Perce, and it sounded like a lot of their, they had a few of them, it sounded like, that were having visions and kind of giving warnings on things to come. And they weren't heeding the warning, and stuff that had been prophesized was coming true as they're escaping. It's like, man, I mean, that's some strong stuff.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, your intuition and wherever these things are coming from beyond it, even just like, I don't know, some sort of way in which your brain is like putting all these things together, but then it's not even to maybe acknowledge also that there could be higher powers or even, you know, relatives on the other side that are telling you things, you know, maybe
helping guide, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Cause that's kind of one of the things that it is, cause there's common threads. It feels like, at least in the little observation I've had on this earth, is that like, communities have common threads like that of like ancestors kind of help guide you on your way, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
Which, yeah, I think is awesome and powerful. And it gives you a little more meaning towards life. You know,
if
you got a team behind you, kind of rooting you on.
I absolutely have a team. Like, it's like, I don't think I know, I may have even known the people, like, you know, just like the stuff that I've survived that, you know, I mean, was most of it was in the point of trying to have fun, you know, but like, you know, probably same with you, you know, where it's like, you're like, we do some crazy stuff just to have fun. And in the end, you make it through all of it. You're like, wow, like there's gotta be someone there looking out for me because, you know, that went way too well. You know,
you have a brush with death and you're like, ooh, guardian angel is on the job today. Yeah. You know, like, yeah, I think a lot of people can have that, you know, they can say that. There's something else I was kind of thinking about that to another point. I keep getting like a reflection off this headphones, so I keep thinking someone's like walking by.
Oh, no, we're good.
Yeah. Like, not that I mind an audience, it's just don't want to get snuck up on.
Right, you know,
don't want the surprise. You know, also like what's cool about our jobs too is that you touched on when you're talking about being up at that high elevation in a blizzard. It's like, we're out in the elements. So a lot of people, if they had the choice, wouldn't be.
Oh, totally.
You know?
Yeah.
And I like that.
Yeah.
You know, the other day we had that little, like, late spring, you know, late winter, I guess, blizzard, you know, like, I can't remember if it was being this week or last week. And it was just awesome, man. Just like, I'm out in it, you know, and working, and just like, a lot of people aren't doing this, aren't out in this, you know, experiencing this weather right now. And it's super cool because, like, as you know, when you're out there, like, we were up, oh man, I'm trying to get the road, but we were up near that hot springs at Warm Springs campground area doing some hazard tree assessment. And you can see the ridge line that's pretty high up from where you're at. And you can hear the wind hit that ridge because it's so quiet. And then you see this like swirl of snow come off it and then just get blown down.
Oh yeah.
And we're you know, nestled in the bottom of the creek bed, you know, by the creek bed. So we're down pretty low and pretty protected with the timber. So it's like, it's just kind of swirling above us.
Oh, cool.
And it just looks so awesome, man.
Yeah.
And it's like, man, if I wasn't doing this job, you know, I probably would have been like, if I had the option, I'd be like, I'm staying in the office today and, you know, working on something. And, but you know, that was the job I had to do that day. So I had to be out there and it's like, man, I'm glad I'm here. You know,
absolutely.
Like, not the most friendly weather, but I was dressed for it and just taking it all in. And it's kind of like we were talking earlier about like those days make other days, you know, better. And even the nice days make those days kind of a cooler experience. Cause
totally.
Rare, you know?
Yeah, it's like those are the days you remember, you know? You remember all the pretty days, but that day that, you know, you were swimming through the brush or the, you know, the it was snowing on you or hailing or lightning bolts, you know, like you're like, that was a cool day, you know? I mean, it's always fun to get back and like need to dry out your clothes, you know what I mean? Where you're like, all right, because it gives that difference between cold and wet and warm and dry, you get to experience that, like, like how good it feels to be warm and dry after being cold and wet for, you know, 8 hours or whatever, you know, and you're like, this is sweet, you know?
Oh yeah, absolutely, man. Like you said, you remember those, the most vivid memories are those when it's, you know, not ideal.
Absolutely. I mean, absolutely. That's the adventure of it. Yeah. We're super lucky to get to do all that stuff. And when we got like new people, you know, and stuff, and they're young, they, you know, like, try to be like, all right, I know you don't want to go out there right now, but like, you're going to remember this, you know, you're going to remember that this was awesome when we get back, you know, like I'll buy you a treat or something.
Exactly.
It'll be fine.
We'll stop. I'll get you something to eat or whatever, you know, like you earned it today. And yeah, man, it's like, living the good days or whatever, you know, like we're living in the, what do they say, like these good old days? I think it's like a Macklemore song, you know. Right. It's like we're living it, you know, I think. And I think you keep living them, you know.
Yeah.
And I think that's also keeps you from living the past if right. you keep doing cool stuff and having adventures.
Oh, absolutely.
Because you don't have that like highlight reel of like, oh man, back in the day when I did this, you know, it's like.
Yeah.
Because I don't have it. You know, I did some pretty cool stuff in my past, but I'm still trying to do cool stuff now.
Oh, absolutely. You know? Yeah. You got to, I mean, this, I always think, okay, if, you know, you do see like your life flash before you, you know, yeah. that you might be cool to have cool things in that, True. You know, flash, you know, and like, and that, like, it's all so worth it, you know, like yeah. whatever the, I love traveling, like going international and stuff. And it's like, there's, it's not a tangible thing, you know, yeah. it's not like, oh, I could use that money and bought some possession, something, you know, yeah. do something responsible with it, you yeah. know, but it's like, oh, screw it. You know, I'll yeah. just go. And then I'll have that memory forever totally, and I don't man. Need to carry, I don't have to like put it in a storage unit. I don't, you know, I just always have that memory and I can yeah. always go back to it and like think about how beautiful that time was. And it's like a pretty sweet deal.
Yeah. And it's almost in a drug in that sense to me is where I'm always searching for something similar. I don't want the same experience, but I right. want something like that new, you know, like first time I went to California and surfed and yeah. ate some like fresh avocado or something. Yeah. Just like, and some really good tacos. Yeah. Like, oh, that's awesome. And like kind of like you're saying, like, you know, like if we're all building a reel to our life and, you know, if the at the end of your days where you're just left with the memories, at least you have like a cool story.
Right.
Instead of, or if, you know, when you die, when they say like your whole life will go flash right your eyes. I don't want to be falling asleep to my own story right, because yeah, it's so boring.
You're like, oh, man, that was sick. You yeah, know,
exactly. like, I would be excited. Like, damn, that was awesome. Instead yeah. of being like, well, there I am again, you know, punching into the, you know, the day and
right.
went home and did nothing again. You know, like, man, if you had one of those like hamster on the wheel kind of lives where it's just like same thing every day. And my hat's off to those folks who can do it, but I'd pull my hair out. And plus, man, if you're watching the reel of your life and that's it, you know, punch right. in, punch out. Like, yeah. Oh, I fell asleep during my own life story.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I remember someone, I heard this, it was actually when I think I was training for smoke jumping. So it gave me even a little more motivation to be like, go out and get it, you know, and, yeah. and become a smoke jumper because, there was like two quotes. One was like, you know, make a life worth living. And then, another phrase I heard, not really a quote, I guess, cause I don't really know who said it, but it's like, if someone wrote a book about your life, and this is a pretty common one, would right. it be worth reading?
Right. Yeah.
And it's like, I don't know if mine really would be, but it's got some exciting times. You
yeah,
know?
Absolutely. And you know, I mean, it doesn't, you don't have to be like a full on rock star. It's like, mm-hmm. you know, as long as you're happy with whatever you're doing, you know, right. You yeah. know, it's like, you know,
and have some adventures down the road, yeah. you know, and like, yeah, exploring new things, yeah. you know, I think oh. it's super important.
I know.
Yeah. And,
yeah. Should have learned to play the electric guitar, man. Should have been a.
No, no, yeah,
I'm just kidding.
Man, you got some, yeah, some wild tour
yeah,
days.
Yeah, dude. yeah.
But I even wonder if that gets like repetitive, you know? Because like I think, you know, I think all of us, you know, if you get that like tenacious mentality and an obsession towards whatever it might be, like say it's like a sport, like football, mm-hmm. soccer, whatever, you know, and it's like, you know, I always wonder, like, man, maybe if I would have like focused some more on football or on soccer and went professional. But then I also like wonder, I'm like, then I'd still feel. For me, at least, I'd feel like pretty one-dimensional.
Yeah,
because like that would have to been my life. You yeah. know, to go that way. Like I was pretty, yeah. pretty talented soccer player when I was a kid, and I got pretty decent at football, and I got pretty good size. And like, you know, I don't think I'd have been like an all-star by any means. But you know, I might have had enough talent to make it if that was my obsession. You right. know, because you see like some guys who make it in their sport, and they're not the most talented person, but they just work yeah. outwork everybody. Right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like we always have, you could always tap into that. But also, I'm like, man, I think that it's like that's all you have, right? Like, right. you see a lot of people like who play the professional sport and they coach the professional sport and then they ref this, or you know, there's like that's their whole life is wrapped up around one thing, and which is good for them, and I, you know, enjoy watching sports, so I'm glad that they exist, but.
Yeah.
I'm also kind of glad that I'm not that.
Oh, know? Absolutely. Whatever the path you're on, man, just enjoy it, you know, because yeah. it's like, I think about it. Oh, I wish I had been a smoke jumper, you know, yeah. I'm like, oh, I should have been a smoke jumper, you know,
you should have been,
I should have been. Oh my God. I love jumping out of the plane. Yeah. But I didn't do that. Right. And I got too old, you know, and I didn't have the quals and, you know, and it was like, you yeah. know, but I look back and there was like the things that I didn't do allowed me to do enjoy other things that, you know, and it's like just being accepting of yourself and your life and how it's unfolding is like probably the most important thing in the end anyway, you know, because it's like, who knows? You know?
Yeah, exactly, man. Maybe. And in life, you know, things always kind of work out. Like if you, you know, if you get a chance, like if you ever had that where like something kind of forced you this way and another thing forced you that way. And then this door opened up. So you went through that door and then you get a chance to pause and you'd be like, well, I wasn't really aiming for that, but then this happened, and then this, and it's like, and then it worked out.
Yeah.
You know, and this like worked out for the best.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely.
And man, and I'm glad you brought that up because I almost let you go without asking this question. One of the really cool things also when I first met you, you were telling me about a camping trip. Or maybe it was the next year we were together, but you were like car camping somewhere, and it was like negative 30 degrees.
Oh, yeah. That was down in the Lost River Range, which is down south of Challis. And that's where, like, Bora Peak and, like, just this beautiful mountain range.
Yeah.
And I think I had been, like, laid off for work for the season and went down there in my little truck, you know. And it was just really fun because it was super cold. And I'm, like, in the back of my truck, like, cooking up quesadillas and, like, having, like, this great time back there, you know? Yeah. Just thinking, like, if anybody saw, like, this truck sitting out here in negative 30, they'd think, oh, this guy's, like, whatever.
Lost his
mind. Yeah, totally. I'm in the back of my little Toyota, like, yeah, make a quesadillas. I think we had cell service. So, you know, it was cool, man. You know, it was really fun.
Yeah.
That was a neat spot. There was a middle of the night, like, have you ever heard of Lake Freeze?
No.
Oh, it was weird. So I'm there and I'm like, you know, ready to, you know, somewhat be abducted by UFOs or something. You know, you're in the back of the truck and you're just in the middle of nowhere and you're like,
nothing happened.
Giant mountain range behind you. No, there's no one anywhere around to like save you if anything goes wrong, you know. And I hear boom, and it sounds like someone's like beating on drums, you know. And I'm like, what is that, you know? And I just hear these like weird noises all night. And anyway, the next day, so I'm kind of freaked out. I'm like, what is that? You know, like, oh my God, am I, you know, I'm thinking like, again, like maybe some Lord of the Rings, like the, whatever, those guys battling on drum thing, like all the stuff's going through my head.
Yeah.
Anyway, there's some reservoir down there, and when they freeze, it makes noise. Like, it makes weird noise. I got up to it, and it was making all these like, pew, boop. You know, and you're like, oh, weird. Anyway, so that was kind of cool.
That is kind of cool. And I've heard that, like, pew noise, like, when the ice, like, shift a little bit when I was skating on it. So
totally.
I totally know that sound.
Totally.
Man. Yeah.
That's a cool spot down there if you haven't been. You're like, when you're driving out of Challis, I think you're on Highway 93. And it kind of looks like Lord of the Rings. I'm not Lord of the Rings, right?
It does, for sure.
You're, like, driving towards that mountain.
Yeah.
And then it's, like, the road actually goes, like, right through the heart of the mountain. And then you pop over the rise, and there's, like, just the whole range there, which is pretty wild looking.
Dude, yeah, because I think that's right on the edge of, like, the Frank Church at one point.
Totally, yeah.
That's so cool, man. Well, yeah, and like you said, the thuds, you know, like I've been on ice like during the day when it's probably like heating up, maybe, and it was like kind of checking itself, like, doof, 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 doof.
Oh, totally.
And it's like, huh. You know, like
scary.
It's skating around. I'm like, oh, am I going through? All right, we're good.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, and then you forget, right? And even if you've been around it, you forget about that. And then you get back on like a warm pond or like a warm day or something, like, or a sunny day, and it starts making all those kinds of noise. Or when, like you said, when the temperature's going back down. Because, like, as a kid, we go out and I think start, like, first light and be out there playing hockey until, like, well, I think maybe we'd make a like, lunch break or something. And then we'd come right back out, you know, until dark and a little bit after if we got the lights going. And, it was awesome, man. But as a kid, you're used to it because you've been hearing it.
Right,
and then
totally.
You forget, though, as an adult, because I'm not out there doing it much anymore, you know?
I bet that's fun skating on, a natural lake, that. I've never done that.
Yeah,
That should be on my bucket list of things to do at some point.
Yeah, absolutely. You find a good spot that, like, didn't get any snow, so you get that, like, just glass ice. Holy, I mean, a puck just sails, man.
Oh,
it's so cool. And you almost feel bad skating on it because, like, as you skate, you make these scratches on the ice,
and
it looks really cool. But then afterwards, like, oh man, that was a pristine sheet that
so
I just
perfect,
carved
yeah.
up, you know. But yeah, it's amazing, and it feels like you just like glide forever too. You get some speed going, and you just can roll, you know.
That's cool. Yeah.
It's really,
I have to do that at some point.
Yeah, definitely. And if you get a fast freeze, sometimes stuff gets like stuck in it, you know, like a leaf or something, you know, and it looks super cool splayed out.
Yeah, that's fun.
Yeah, man, and yeah, like that kind of stuff, man. Like I. like, I don't know how you end up going out there in negative 30, but being out there and just making the best of it is super cool, dude.
Yeah, it's fun. Down. Bring some down jackets and some, you know, it's fun.
Is that how you stay warm?
Oh, totally, yeah. Yeah. It's like kind of got my truck set up in a certain way.
Did you have a bunch of layers in the bottom and then?
Yeah, keep that bottom warm. And then I had now I have one of those like Paco pad, like a river rafting pad that I use. And that's nice. But then, yeah, I just have like my cooler, my cook box, maybe the food box.
Yeah.
And then you just slide that over, and then I'm cooking with propane, so you got to remember to keep those windows open. Yeah. It's like, I was in the back there, and I'm like, I got to feel a little funny, you know? You're like, oh, wait, then you open it, and you're like, that first air that comes in, you're like, you can taste fresh air. You're like, oh, thank God, okay.
Yeah. You know. The old brain starts firing again. You're like, oh, all right, yeah, all I got to keep that open a little bit.
If we're getting close there, you know, I'll just take a nap, you know.
Yeah, just stay. It's so warm, so comfortable. And it was just like a normal topper, right? It wasn't like insulated or anything?
Yeah, just a straight up Toyota, with the ARE topper. You got the one, the little high rise one, which is nice. You can kind of sit up in there.
Oh, that is nice, man.
Yeah.
Did you have a heater going at all? Or
No, just the down. Down's amazing.
Down is amazing.
Those birds are like, I always think about how, like, with those natural fibers, like I'm a big, like wool and like down.
Yes.
And actually, when you combine those two things together, it's like, amazing. But it's like you're really relying on, you know, whether you believe in evolution or whatever, you know, you're relying on hundreds of millions of years of this thing, like with this perfect,
yeah, that can survive in the worst of it. Yeah,
I mean, geese fly, they'll fly up over like 30,000 feet. They'll actually freeze to death up in like storm. They'll get sucked up into like cloud suck, and then get sucked up in a cloud and freeze, and then they'll just fall out of the sky. But I mean, they can fly at like 30,000 feet.
That
you know,
is
and they're
nuts,
migrating.
Man.
You're like, that's a pretty good.
That is wild.
I want that. You know, like, I want to be covered in feathers. You know, like, that would be sweet. You know,
exactly. Yeah, because they can regulate so well off that, because they're not overheating, they're not freezing, right? Because they got that regulation.
Oh, totally.
Yeah, because eagles that'll kind of splay their feathers out a little bit to cool off when it's really hot.
Yeah.
Get that airflow going. And probably just the way the feathers are designed too, probably catches that wind flow, right? Yeah.
It's just so perfect.
I know. We got these like soft, wimpy, you know, soft skin.
We're so weird.
I know, dude. Barely any hair on us.
It's so weird, dude. Yeah. Talk about another. Okay. I got a bunch of trippy stories, but another trippy story. Okay. So I'm up in the West Fork. And I'm walking through the woods. I'm by these giant ponderosa pines. And I see this giant buck, like huge. His rear tines had split into three. So he had these like baskets like on the tines. And he had gray around his eyes. And he didn't know I was there.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of standing by this tree. And he's just eating, just grazing along. And he goes up the hill a little bit, and all within my view. And I'm just standing there, you know, and I'm thinking, okay, like, don't wuss out. Like, maybe he'll come down and you'll be like right next to him, you know, or something radical, right? Mm-hmm. So he goes around, and then he goes kind of behind the tree, this giant ponderosa pine. And I'm gonna sound super trippy, but I kind of poke my head around the tree to see if he's there. And in my mind, I get this flash of what that would look like to the deer.
Yes,
you know, this like super white looking dude, like poking his head around the corner of the tree. Like
from the deer's point of view?
No, it would look like a horror movie, dude. It would look like some creepiest thing you ever saw. And I was like, whoa, that was weird, you know? Like, so we're definitely weird. We're definitely weird.
Oh, yeah, totally, man. Like, yeah, because they're used to seeing other deer and moose and whatever else. And like you said, all of a sudden this white face
big
pops
white,
up. What are you doing?
It's a Slender Man or something, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, man. Yeah, and like we just, you know, like, I think about like even like insects, right? Like you flick a fly and usually it'll just like buzz off and come back. It's like, man, if something that big flicked me that hard,
right?
You know, I'd be mush.
Right, yeah, totally.
You know, like.
Yeah, that's weird too, yeah.
Yeah, you know, think about stuff like that, about how like not durable we are. It's like, man, it's amazing that humans have been around this long.
It really is. It's, yeah.
We're pretty soft. We're like these little bags of, you know, like little water balloons walking around, like blood balloons walking around.
Well, it'd be kind of nice to have some fur, maybe some claws, you know.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, something else that, exactly. Like, some kind of adaptive thing that, like, you know, even if our muscles, like gorillas got like the harder muscle and, you know, so they probably could take an impact a little better than us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know my skull's pretty thick, so at least I got that going.
Same,
for me.
Dude. Yeah, I got grace with a nice thick skull. Oh, yeah, I got that old saying. Was pretty true with me. That was it. Strong back and a weak, strong back and a soft mind. Strong back and a weak mind.
Something like that.
Yeah, strong back, weak mind. Yeah, I think it was at guard school or something. One of the old salty dudes told me that too. He's like, "Baird, you're blessed with a strong back and a weak mind."
You're like, "Sweet, like, hey, thanks."
Yeah, thanks. Man. I was like, "Good, is that cool?
Is that a good thing?" Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah, I'm here to dig line.
Yeah, I dig that line. You know. Yeah,
yeah, exactly, yeah, man.
That's fun.
But dude, I won't keep you too much longer, man. And thanks for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's been awesome.
Yeah. Have you done a podcast before? I was going to
ask that. No, this will be the first time. That's kind of fun.
Sweet, man.
Yeah, super fun.
Yeah, I'm glad you came on, dude, and shared some cool stories and hopefully inspire some more folks to get out there and just enjoy the elements, enjoy nature, and, you know, get yourself immersed in there a little bit.
Sweet. Yeah, awesome. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming. Thanks for tuning in, folks.
All right.